where we are here. All right.
It's Free Thought Thursday in the wine cellar.
All right. Da-da-da. Yeah, it's just going to be some dead air as we're starting, but the goal of this episode is to talk to MG from Actify Press, basically because I want to talk about this Twitter thread and these fucking shenanigans that happened. All right. MG, your mic should be hot. Can I get a decibel check from you?
Yes, ma'am.
Excellent. All right, hang on one
second. Is that good?
Ah, hold on. I clicked the wrong thing. All right, hold on. Let me just see your decibels.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, sounds perfect. Thank you.
Mic check, one, two. One, two.
Perfect.
Always want to do that.
I know everybody's like, all right, mic check, one, two. How original, right?
Yeah, super original.
It's all the original. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, all right. I didn't really have an intro planned out in my head because I just, like, don't be planning things out. But, I think, are we introducing you as MG? Is that the...
Just Michael Graham from Actify Press, also known as MG, I guess.
Yes, MG, Michael Graham from Actify Press, who is hanging out with us in the wine cellar because we had a situation the other day. Michael Graham made a tweet and you hurt people's feelings.
It's what I do, I guess.
That's what you do now. Is what you do now, shit.
Yeah, if it ain't wasn't before, what I do now.
Your job description has evolved, sir.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I wanted to fucking talk about your tweet in this Twitter thread. Like, what the fuck happened?
Performative wokeness land decided to jump in my timeline, I guess.
I guess it's
one way to look at it. And I checked after you and I had tweeted back and forth. Mm-hmm. I went back and started checking the profiles of the folks, you know, the loudest and the surest,
right?
The surest and the wrongest folks.
Yes.
And
yes.
I was like, PhD candidate, graduate from Hampton. that's what it is. They never had to make these hard decisions. That's what it is. Because if it doesn't, you know, if it didn't occur to you immediately that people have to make hard decisions, I said, poor black family, mm-hmm. What is their priority? You know, and it shouldn't be hard to say, okay, do I deal with, do I want my kids to eat? Or do I deal with this, you know, these constant microaggressions or macroaggressions being called nigga? I can say it, right?
Yeah. So,
you know, I just threw it out there because, you know, I guess the background is that some folks on the left that we deal with and you know, have been around were saying that we could do all things at all times. But my thing was, okay, that's fine. If we're going to do all things at all times, we know that resources are limited on the left as far as the movement is concerned, as far as the movements are concerned. Mm-hmm. We know resources are limited, as in time, money, time, money, and energy. These things are always limited, right? Especially on the left, where the money's limited, because nobody's putting money into people eating every day.
Right.
None of these big companies are going to drop you know, $1 million in your Patreon because mm-hmm. you're trying to get people fed every day, right? So if you know that the left is divided, undercapitalized, under-resourced, so we need to talk about what's most important, mm-hmm. right? And what, and if we're going to talk about intersections, what intersections are going to have the most bang for your buck, right? And if we're really honest, no matter where you are on the spectrum of intersections, if you have more money and more access to the things you need, whether that be healthcare, whether that be housing, the higher you are on the class spectrum or the income or wealth spectrum, mm-hmm. the less these things impact you. I don't mean to seem crass or reductive as the woke folks say nowadays.
Yes.
But it's just a reality that if you're higher up on the income scale, mm-hmm. you have less of these particular issues. Not to say your life is hunky dory, but you have less issues than folks that need more. So why don't, no matter where you are, on no matter where you, where at intersection you are, money is the most intersectional thing in America. We're in a capitalist system. It's not going to change anytime soon. If you don't have money, your problems are multiplied.
Right.
So I know a lot of people say more money, more problems, but most people, you know, aren't millionaires. So
exactly,
I don't think we're going to worry about that right now. We just want people to be able to eat while they fight these fights. And like you mentioned before, to me, it's just logical that, okay, if I'm trying to build this movement and trying to work toward solidarity and make this movement bigger and people understand what's going on, it would be great if more people were eating every day. It would be great if people didn't have to worry about homelessness. People didn't have to worry about their health care. And then you can grow the movement. Yeah, some people will drop out of movement. I got what I need to walk away. But I'm sure more than likely, you're going to get more people involved because you can see, they can see what this movement has done for their lives, and they may want to pass it, you know, pay it forward, or they just may want to say thank you. I'm going to fight with these guys because they fought for me. Right? And to me, that just makes sense. Right? And I don't think it's a big leap to say that that everybody likes to eat. Everybody likes to have a roof over their head.
Right.
And some folks have to deal with racism or sexism or whatever in the workplace just to eat every day, right? If they're blessed enough to have a job and blessed enough to eat every day.
Right.
And, you know, like, you know, what was the movie that what's that dude's name? It was Danny Glover and Matt Damon. Anyway, there were two homeless guys, and Danny Glover pointed across the street. He was showing Matt Damon the ropes on the street, and he pointed to a guy with a briefcase and a suit. He said, "Look at that guy. He's two paychecks away from homelessness."
Yeah.
Now, I watched this movie like in the early 90s, I think it was, maybe late 80s, and that just struck me. I was like, "Wow, that is staggering." And it's so real that most people are living on a precarious edge, or just on the edge of falling into the abyss, and not recognizing that, stability, economic stability, and economic stability is empowering, right? So you want to empower the victims, whatever system you're dealing with, and the quickest way to empower them is to take care, make them stable,
right?
And you know, that was the point. I mean, was the tweet, could the tweet be turned around? Yeah, but if you're a perceptive person and you've had, you know, any experience with homelessness or you know, not having health care, or you know, you've lost your home, whatever, if you've had hard times, it will probably resonate with you. At least I assume it will resonate with you. You know, I've had a few bouts with homelessness and poverty. I'm not there anymore, thank God, right? And, you know, I grew up strictly middle class. I mean, that stuff, you know, self-inflicted.
Yeah.
You know, I could have gone home, but I got proud. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
But, yeah. Huh?
Yeah. No, I know. And, I was actually just going to read the tweet because...
yeah,
like
please,
the
I'm
fucking
sorry, yeah.
The reaction to this shit is like just fucking wild to me. The actual tweet, which I like how you did this on Christmas Eve. You I know you ruined people's holiday with this tweet.
Yeah, I did.
Sometimes
didn't mean to, but hey, if this tweet hurt your feelings, yeah, you deserve to have a ruined holiday.
Yeah.
But go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Sometimes brevity can be clarifying, as most of us agree that race and economics are linked. However, assuming resources are limited, we must prioritize our efforts. So here's an exercise. What do you think is the highest priority for a poor black family? Children eating daily or not being called nigger? And people got mad.
They lost it. They lost their shit.
It was like as we now say, it was a who chile.
Yeah, do you have the tweet below it? There's a tweet right after it.
Yes. You said if your answer is A, you understand how black people prioritize their lives in lean times. Most humans are no different. Conduct yourselves accordingly. Merry Christmas. And then you said this is clearly...
I don't think it was unclear.
Yeah. This is clearly a simple hypothetical, but the reactions are telling. Prioritizing material needs should be uncontroversial. So... These comments, people were like, this isn't fair, and this isn't how it works, and, like, my this is my biggest critique of your tweet right here. You said some nigga shit, and then a bunch of not niggas got in the conversation. It's like...
I think it was real. You know what I mean? I think it was real. And I think part of this thing is, you know, you get a lot of virtue signaling, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of times they skip... They skip our humanity that's also connected to our blackness.
Right.
You know, we're human beings, right? We're not some mystical creature that needs a special set of caring, right? We're not hothouse flowers that you have to, everything has to be at a certain temperature. We're not different from any other human being beyond the fact that we've been shit on by, you know, by capitalism in this country, right?
Right.
So, we're just in a shitty situation based on how the system worked against us, right? But we're still human beings. We still want to eat every day. We want to make sure our kids eat every day. We want to make sure our kids have a good education, good opportunity, and, you know, all the way down the line, right?
Right.
And my thing is, a lot of times people forget that we're just simply human beings and we have the same needs as everyone else, the same foundational needs as everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I like to point at Maslow's hierarchy of need.
Right.
Right. It's really simple if you just look at that. Okay, we need food, water, shelter, heat. You know, let's take care of that first before we start talking about who's calling people names and microaggressions or whatever. For me, if my kids are eating every day, you know, these microaggressions mean a little bit less.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
A little like, less
right.
Back,
right. Like it's still harmful, but a lot of harm has also been mitigated at that point, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Because there's a, you know, I feel that this instability. I mean, I'm sure I'm right on this. This instability has like a multiplier effect on these microaggressions or whatever stress you're going through the day. You know, there's a multiplier effect because you have these underlying concerns that can really hurt you.
Right.
You know, stress kills.
It does.
You know,
absolutely.
Poverty kills. You know. And, you know, and people, you know, one of the, you know, because I've been, you know, people have told me this was a hill I chose to die on. But I've been on this hill a long time,
right?
I've been on this hill forever, as a matter of fact. But I wrote an article in 2016 or 15 about how the centrists were saying that we, actually a couple articles about it, were saying that money won't fix everything. Economics, you know, economics aren't black folks' issues. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right, and you know, I see people making that argument, but then it's like, I can only assume this has come from people who have never been both like seriously poor and black at the same time, because that whole argument is some bullshit, right? Because there are people like,
yeah,
you know, this whole like this the Medicare for All is racist because racism exists in the medical industry. Yes, it does, but saving 10,000 black people a year or getting them treated for diabetes or hypertension or a pain condition is fucking life-saving and not just, you know, and I think that's
absolutely.
Another thing too is people don't see it as a community aspect. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if you have a black family, you know, or maybe, I mean, there's all kinds of situations. Oh, it's okay. Is that the dog? Y'all just have puppies too, right?
Yeah, we still got three at the house. And plus my son is here too. You know, he's in my son's room whining. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
But yeah, you know, that's something that I see people say like, oh, well, Medicare for All won't solve, you know, racism in the medical industry. And it's like, no, it won't. And I've suffered from racism in the medical industry, like, you know. But at the same time, I also understand that, you know, if you have a black family or a small black community, losing one breadwinner out of a household is huge. That is a disaster.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So, like, even if you can get one black breadwinner of a family getting their medication or getting seen and getting treated, that's life-saving to everybody else in the family, you know? And I don't think... I think white folks have... a lot of white folks have too many resources that they don't seem to grasp that. You know,
there's a huge assumption of abundance that I didn't realize was there.
Yeah,
now, I have to give. Let me go back and give credit to Brother B. He's been on this. He's been on this for like the last 2 weeks, and you know, I wasn't really paying attention to it. And then, you know, having discussions with people about it, you know, because people are like, because he's affiliated with Actify Press. He's also brilliant, right? He's an educator, and people were saying that. And he's also snarky. He could be an ass. But people were saying that, you know, he was being mean to people, right? But he's got a hair trigger sometimes, but most of the time he just gives back what he's getting.
Right.
And there was a lot of you saw a little bit of it in this regard. There were a lot of disingenuous arguments that, you know, it were arguments that were just arguments for argument for argument's sake.
Mm-hmm.
And he was dealing with a lot of that. But, you know, I just left it alone because even if you're affiliated with Actify Press, we're about having the discussion and people are going to disagree. Right. So have the discussion. Let's come to a space where, you know, we're like 60% in agreement and we all move on with our lives. Right. Mm-hmm. But he could be a bit of an ass,
mm-hmm.
but he's right. And he's standing on solid ground. Right. He's standing on the ground built by the Field Sisters and Adolph Reed. Right.
Okay.
Meaning that we're, you know, we have to prioritize the needs of, you know, of people first,
right?
Well, you know, get people stable. Let's get there first, and then we can talk about this other stuff. Not that this other stuff isn't important,
mm-hmm.
but we have to prioritize what becomes what we put our energy into,
right?
And if we can get more bang for our buck going after the economic piece,
mm-hmm.
which will also grow our movement and grow this grow what's going on. Save people's lives, literally, and this,
yes.
and that's not hyperbole. Mm-hmm. If we can do that by focusing our energy, laser focus on this piece, I don't think it's crazy. And also, back at the Medicare for All thing, you know, when you have this big a change, you're sort of hitting the reset button, and we can go back and say, okay, we know this racism exists, we know why it exists. There are all these studies on the table where it exists,
mm-hmm.
Why it exists, and who's doing it, and where it comes from. Let's talk about that and work it into the system.
Right.
Right. And I think that would be more helpful than Medicare for All is broken. It can never work. Let's quit.
Right.
You know, I think it's much more helpful. Right.
Well,
but of course, you know, there are forces out there that don't want this conversation to happen.
Well, you know, right? I gotta
we
say,
can't lose sight of that.
One of the things that I find mm-hmm. that was the most telling about your original tweet was what you specifically said is what should we prioritize? Should we solely focus on?
Yeah.
What should we prioritize? Mm-hmm. And it's like, now I, you know, and I know, like, the longtime listeners are like, Phoenix, we fucking know. Yeah, I know. Yeah, 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 yeah. Whatever. Born to squatters, like, you know, born to squatters, mm-hmm. west side of Chicago, no heat, no mm-hmm. running water, you know, no food, eventually mm-hmm. taken out by childcare services, you know, through foster care, had a couple times of being mm-hmm. homeless, doing the street-based sex work, you know, while being, you know, mm-hmm. not having secure housing and a single parent and just, like, just all kinds of bullshit, you know? And it's like, having been through that, you know, while being black, mm-hmm. while being a woman, it's like, I can guarantee you right now that a living wage is more important than dealing with workplace racism in this moment.
Absolutely.
Because I can't have mm-hmm. the energy to fight workplace racism if I can't even mm-hmm. afford to pay my fucking rent because I don't have a living wage. Like, you know what I mean? And it's
mm-hmm.
like, people really pretend that they can't seem to understand this, but it's like, I'm not saying don't talk about white supremacy. I talk about white supremacy all the fucking time. Like, have you seen my fucking timeline? You know? And, like, I fucking talk about white supremacy and racism. I talk about sexism. I talk about how people shame sex workers all the time. All those things are absolutely important. I also know
mm-hmm.
that, you know, in my demographic, a lot of people that I know who are engaged in sex work are doing it because they can't get straight jobs that pay their rent.
Mm-hmm.
Sex work is the only choice they have.
Absolutely.
If every job mm-hmm. started off with, like, a living wage, there are so many people who would be able to leave the sex work industry, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If we have
better social
safety nets. A lot of sex workers I know have some sort of like chronic illness or like a disability that prevents them from being able to work like Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 or whatever. You know, a
mm-hmm.
better social safety net would be huge for these people. You know,
mm-hmm.
when it comes to dealing with
racism, and
like all these things. And it's mm-hmm. like, people are like, no, it's wrong to say prioritize the economic thing first. And it's like, but people are literally starving to death. Like, people are dying because
mm-hmm.
they can't crowdfund medication. People are going homeless because they can't crowdfund their rent. And y'all niggas like, no. And then trying to explain racism to me. Like, nigga, what the fuck kind of universe did I just stumble into?
Yeah, and to me, it's just logical. If you say you want to help people, the first thing you need to do is empower them. That's the very first thing you need to do. If any victims of a system, the first thing you need to do is empower them, right? Yes. That's what Me Too was all about. You know, you have to empower the victims of these things,
mm-hmm.
right? And if you don't empower the victims, if you don't, we can speak specifically of racism right now. If you don't empower the victims of racism and make sure their lives are stable, then you don't understand what racism is.
Right.
Right. You don't understand that the economic aspect or financial aspect impacts of racism, of structural racism are like 90% of the deal, in my view, right? It's over 60, let's say that. I don't want anybody to go, it's at least 50, you know?
Right.
Yeah, all the pedantry. Oh my God. The everybody wants to splice everything and analyze every comma, mm-hmm. and it's a tweet. People,
yes.
You want to, people looking for a dissertation in a tweet, even in a tweet a tweet storm, a tweet thread, or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Even with that, if you're looking for even with a blog post, if you're looking for a dissertation, you're an ass. You really are.
Yeah.
I mean, there's really no way to get around it, right? If you're looking, this is crazy. This is you should have said what you meant. I did say what I meant.
Right.
First of all, the people around this tweet understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. 920 people took the damn survey,
right,
and went on about their damn business. You know what I mean? Almost 1,000 people. We'll just say, we'll round it up to 1,000. I can do that. I'm grown. 1,000 mm-hmm. people took the damn survey and moved on about their damn day. You know, and it's galling. It's funny now, right? But it's galling that everybody wanted to parse everything, and mm-hmm. and those are the people that the parsers and the pedants. They are horrible. They are absolutely horrible. Everybody, and this is when I'm sorry, I'm talking a lot here. This is another thing why I stood up at the fire is because the left too often wants to speak in big words, and you know, you want to use a $20 word when a $2 word would have been just fine. You know, there's a lot of educational and social looking down your nose shit on the left,
right?
You know, and it's annoying as shit,
mm-hmm.
right? If communication should be about conveying an idea, conveying a concept, conveying thoughts. Not about, it shouldn't be a showcase.
Yes.
You know, it should be, if people don't understand you, and I guess I'm sort of guilty with this tweet, if people don't understand you, it's your fault, right?
Mm-hmm.
But even when you try to explain to them what you meant, a lot of people still got all up in their feelings.
And, you
right?
know, that's the thing.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah.
You know, yeah. So mm-hmm. I'm looking through some of these comments and, mm-hmm. you know, because now I'm looking where I jumped in this conversation. I jumped in like 16 hours after it started because I was running on CPT. Yeah.
You know, but I appreciate you coming in to back me up because I was swinging by myself for a while. It was just me, and then Beat came in, and a few other people popped up.
I was what the fuck is that? Yeah. So I just like, and this is a perfect exemplification of what I'm talking about. So I came mm-hmm. in the thread, and I said, to be honest, and this is three tweets back to back. I said, to be honest, I think a huge part of the problem is the black community has been painted as a monolith and the most privileged are the gatekeepers. How often are hood niggas, deep south rural niggas, consulted in these spaces?
Mm-hmm.
It's always middle class or has debt, but still has a degree and an opportunity type of black person taking up the most space. That's not poor black people. Because I mean hood niggas. Like, you know, and this is because what I was talking about, like, this is some mm-hmm. shit because, you know, I'm from Chicago. This is some shit, like, you know, I actually been through.
Mm-hmm.
Put weights on the toilet mm-hmm. lid so rats don't crawl up through your shit in the middle of the night and fucking bite you. We all sleep in the living room because mm-hmm. the heat is turned off. We go to a church just so we can eat that day because they're having a picnic. We need to hear from people like that when we talk about what do black people need. What a middle class mm-hmm. college graduate needs is not necessarily going to be what some niggas in the hood need or what, you know, niggas like in the rural mm-hmm. south need, you know. And so we need to open up that mm-hmm. conversation. And that's some white man
mm-hmm.
from England for some reason felt a need to say words to me. And this is exactly what I'm talking about. I'm not black, but spent half my life on the street with no toilet and rats in my pockets. I think you're full of shit. No need to respond. I've had enough responses from college kids talking to the poor. Nigga, what? I don't have a degree in anything. Like, what the fuck?
I was like,
what?
First thing I thought was, oh shit, this dude is dead.
Because you know, I've been lost. I'm like, who's this hoe ass nigga in my mentions? But you know, but it's like, this is the fucking, like, this is, and you know, I have people literally trying to explain racism to me. I have people telling me that getting called nigger at your job without consequences isn't racism. How, Sway? The whole reason they can call you a nigger to your face at your job and not have consequences is literally because of racism. How, Sway?
Black people came in my mentions telling me that these two things are not connected. What the?
And you know what? And even with that, like, most of the people I saw commenting were white, but even a lot of the black people I saw commenting, I know a lot of them niggas have degrees, they have good jobs, they were raised middle class, they weren't from the hood.
Yeah, got these headshots in their bio.
Right, and it's like, I really just want to be like, this is a hood nigga conversation, y'all need to go.
We can call the hood nigga, but this is common sense. You know what I mean? This is common sense. How the hell do you expect people to fight a fight? You know, or how do you expect people to live their lives in poverty? Like some people said, suffer till the revolution. What?
you know
what I mean? I don't get it. You know, well, they just give us scraps. You know, right now, scraps do some people a whole lot of freaking good. You know?
Right. That's the thing.
Go ahead.
Right now, there's people who aren't even getting scraps. Like,
yes,
damn.
Yes. they just pushed this work requirement they're pushing this work requirement all over the damn country for welfare.
Mm-hmm.
You know? If you can get a good paying job, you wouldn't need welfare. How is this hard to understand? You know? And it's horrible. I mean, how we measure poverty is horrible. In our anti-poverty programs aren't enough, especially in big cities where most of us are. Not to say poor white people aren't important, but for purposes of this conversation, right? And even when we talk about poor white people, they need help too. That's a huge intersection that we can use for our movement.
Yeah,
you know, Martin Luther King and the current iteration of the Poor People's Campaign, they understand that. Fred Hampton understood that. All these people understand that more people is better for a movement, right? I mean, there's a Peter principle where more people are just getting, and some people, a lot of people just getting away. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, even if you just get their vote, even if you just get a tweet every once in a while in support, you know, of this particular thing, right, or if you get some people who make a phone call every once in a while in your movement, whatever it is, having more people helps.
Right.
Especially in the era of social media. If you get enough people tweeting a particular thing, it's, you know, it's big. Like OptiSanitize, IPM and Walker Bragman did this, the OptiSanitize thing for Syria, right? Because people were, the news was ignoring the Syrian war, right? Mm-hmm. So this OptiSanitize thing, IPM and Walker Bragman and a few other people jumped in on this thing, and they really pushed hard. And there wasn't a whole lot of them. They just got everybody to start tweeting at the same time and tweeting at the right people at the same time.
Right.
And they changed national media. Just IPM, Walker Bragman, and a few people around them, right? They changed national media. Nobody was talking about Yemen until OptiSanitize popped up on social media.
Right.
Right? And that's powerful. Imagine if people everybody who's gotten on their feet starts retweeting stuff. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, it's little stuff like that that people don't recognize could be helped if we get people on their feet. And to me, that's just logical. And if you don't find that logical, I don't really understand what are you doing on the left? If you don't understand people need to eat first, I don't understand what you're doing on the left, really, other than getting in the way. I guess that's what we're talking about, people getting in the way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's the thing, is people, because I think, you know, something that was interesting to me about this thread is, like, I don't think it would have happened in a lot of other contexts, right? Like, if it had, you know, because this was specifically about anti-black racism, right? Like, if it was about, like, homophobia, I don't think it would have gone down that way. If it was misogyny, I don't think it would have gone down exactly the same way. Ableism, quite possibly. But, you know, the thing being that, like, one of the things is, like, there's always this, like, you stay in your lane. If you haven't lived that experience, you don't get to tell people what they need or how they should be responding. And it's like, there's this whole paternalism. Yeah, there was a lot of lane hoppers. There's this whole paternalism thing. A ton of lane hoppers. Yeah, and it's like... could you imagine...
Especially your homeless dude. He lost his damn... He lost his shit. And then people come in... He just jumped on you with some crazy shit. He even showed people the tweet he came in with. You have that tweet? You want to read that tweet?
Oh, yeah, I do have that tweet. Let me get back to it. But, you know, and, like, that was the thing, because, like, that would not have flown in any possible capacity if instead of talking about racism, we were talking about, like, sexism in the workplace. Like, would you rather be called a bitch in the workplace, or would you rather get a pay raise? I guarantee you the conversation would not have gone like that, because, you know, the white people who were, you know, defending this racist bullshit wouldn't have said that shit, you know? So, in my tweet where I said, you know, I mean, hood niggas, you know, talking about hood niggas need to have a voice, you know, and what poverty is like in the hood. And that was where he said, I'm not black, but spent half my life living on the streets. You're full of shit.
Okay, you did read it before. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Yeah, and then I was like, and then he goes on and he starts saying, swear on the lives of everyone you know that you didn't go to college. And I was like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Doing anything.
He's like, you're a college kid. You're a tumbleweed. I don't even know. Is that a fucking British insult? You fucking tumbleweed, mate. I don't know. And he's like, if you were real, you'd know how easy it is to steal when you're homeless. And I'm like, oh, so a white man can afford to steal things when he's homeless, can he? Okay. He's just gonna fucking steal shit. That's the thing. And like, even that in that context, like, he's straight up talking about, like, I have pictures of myself when I was homeless because I stole phones from college kids. And I was like, yeah, I can't afford to steal things from white people.
Can't do that. And the black folks around me don't have shit either. So what were we stealing?
Right, exactly. Like, you know, like, even in that fucking aspect, it was just like, it's just wild to me. And, you know.
And he was from... I mean, from my point of view, number one, he was just rude, right? Number two, he was out of his depth, right?
Yeah.
He should have just left this shit alone. Even if you don't talk about the racial aspect of it, just a human-to-human interaction sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't just dive in people's mentions and call people liars and accuse them of having an education, which is not a bad thing, but, you know, just trying to tar them as somebody with education, therefore they think they're better than you sort of thing, right? And that was completely and utterly unnecessary. Completely. Mm-hmm. It was completely, yeah. And then people were defending him and got mad at us because we called him a liar, right?
Yeah.
Because he seemed like he was lying, right?
He
still could have been a lie, right? And what? So what if you were a homeless guy? You get to talk crazy to folks? Because you were homeless?
No.
What?
No.
Hell no. You're not the only one with problems. That's what calls me. Now, one of the things that calls me about all this stuff is that people were defending this guy, saying that we should give him a pass.
Right.
But he wasn't giving anybody a pass.
Right.
And nobody said anything to him other than the people that were on our side already.
And the wild thing about it,
crazy to me,
the part where he came in, it was literally a brown woman of color and two black people talking about poverty in America in black neighborhoods. At what point did you think your fucking British ass was wanted, needed, requested, or summoned? No.
Even on a public forum, why would you decide to dive in there? It doesn't make sense, right? Oh, you know, dude, one guy said, well, he's obviously having problems. That ain't my problem. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You come in here and you throw some shit on the wall, somebody's gonna throw some shit back at you. This is life. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's the thing that bothers me. It's like he's supposed to get up, and like you said, the white dude is supposed to get a pass for yelling at, for treating black people bad? Why is that?
And
I have issues too.
It's not even
you
that.
You know what I mean?
That,
you have issues too.
Like, as if it already wasn't bad enough, but it was a thread about anti-blackness.
Yes.
Y'all gave him a pass. And like, while being mad at the original tweet, because it was unfair. Mm-hmm. So talking nigga shit is unfair.
I guess it's okay
for the white man to say anti-black shit.
Yeah, I guess we should give the folks some background. I'm sorry, that's my fault. Like I said, Brother B was going around talking about this, and people started calling him a class reductionist. I don't know where that term came from. I'm not going to claim to understand it, but basically saying that he reduces everything to class, right? But when we're talking about American racism, we're talking about class. We're talking about money. We're talking about economics, right? Because that's 80 to 90% of the deal. Right, getting called names is the minor piece, right?
Right,
right, and then you have the terrorism, the violence, but that's wrapped around money too, right? All this is wrapped around money. Somebody's getting paid when we get screwed over, right? Mm-hmm. Money is always flowing. It's constantly moving, right? And every time we get screwed over, somebody else is getting paid,
right?
Right. And that drives a lot of what happens to us because we're considered the victim class. And like Yvette Carnell says, all the failure ends up in our neighborhoods. All the failure ends up in our communities. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's something all the toxic waste ends up in our neighborhoods. Right. Yep. And that's something that people don't understand. All that stuff that we're losing on, there's somebody winning on the other side.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
Racism in America started based on economics, right? I got in trouble, but some bunch of idiots jumped on me about the Bacon's Rebellion tweet. You know, some scholars may disagree about the insignificance of Bacon's Rebellion, but at the end of the resultant legislation that came after Bacon's Rebellion is critical in how you understand blackness in the United States. Mm-hmm. It's been racism in the United States.
Never did I say
racism didn't exist.
Right.
Right. People saying, well, there were slaves before. Yeah. And the Indians were getting taken off the land. Yes. But it wasn't codified. Right. It wasn't written into law. It was only practice. When something goes from practice to policy, that's a major change.
Right.
That is monumental milestone.
I just want to do like the too long didn't read version for folks who aren't familiar with the Bacon Rebellion or Bacon's Rebellion.
Please. I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah. So basically, there was a bunch of indentured servants who did their labor and were now, you know, free. And it was basically poor white people. Mm-hmm. And there were some poor black people among them who were not, you know, slaves, but had actually just been indentured servants. And prior to the Bacon's Rebellion, when you looked at laws, they were based on like colonies or based on specific areas. And they would say things like a member of the colony cannot. Right. So it was based on like whether you were part of that particular like tribal in-group. Right. And so after Bacon's Rebellion, because the white indentured folks got together and the former indentured folks got together and basically scared the shit out of rich white people because these folks wanted access to the same capital and to land and to having the same rights and business opportunities, that after the rebellion, chattel slavery became the absolute norm. Right. There weren't any more black indentured servants, and white folks got to just be free. And so it created like a permanent division, racially speaking. And it was after this you started seeing like Indians or natives, black and white, actually written in laws, like no black person can, no white person will, no Indian is going to, and that sort of thing. And so it really, you know, as a result of this rebellion, because people of different races got together, but they were in the same class bracket. And so the end result ended up being creating a, you know, permanent system that divided people based on race. And it really paved the way for an increase of slavery. And there just really weren't any black indentured servants after that point. So, you know, it was like a huge turning point as far as legislating racism in a legal way. Because this was, and like literally, when, you know, I know folks have heard me say it. I say whiteness was literally created to give Europeans an upper hand and to make it legal to discriminate against other people. This was how it happened, was through the Bacon's Rebellion. It was after that that it started being white people and black people. Before that, it was like a member of a colony or an indentured servant, and it wasn't necessarily as racialized, you know? So that was the result of that rebellion.
And part of it is what they did was they codified a coalition of European people, right? Mm-hmm. Who part before that were just fine with killing each other, the Irish and the English and the Germans, and you know, of course, later the Italians and the Greeks and all the darker, the southern southern European people were accepted into whiteness, right?
Right.
So what they built a European coalition while dividing everybody else,
yes.
Right? And that's important to understand because that coalition scared them. And they knew they needed to create their own coalition, right? That coalition of black, red, brown, and white people scared the crap out of them. Even if you don't believe in, you know, that if this crazy notion that white people are never involved in our movements, I don't know where that notion came from. Mm-hmm. Even if you subscribe to that, you need to subscribe that numbers are important, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's simply more people to do the things that need to be done,
right?
And that coalition was very, very dangerous to the ruling elite, as it is now. That's why these same people don't want to see it happen. Well, their current iteration of that group of rich people now don't want to see that coalition build. That's why they hate Bernie. Right. That's why they're doing everything they can to keep Bernie from becoming president,
mm-hmm.
because he's building a coalition based on economics. You know,
right.
Of course, economics isn't going to solve all our problems, but it's going to hit a whole lot of them.
Right.
And people are recognizing that. And, you know, and I'm sorry, I'm going off on a tangent, but now that we're here.
mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that bothers me about this anti-Bernie stuff that we're kind of falling into with this economics are important, but, right? We're kind of falling into harming building this coalition because we're talking about, well, we got to put energy into XYZ whatever because it's just as important as economics, but it's not mm-hmm. to the victims of this system,
right? Well,
so we need to prioritize based on what they need,
right?
Go ahead.
I find that to be mm-hmm. a big part of the problem with the left is that mm-hmm. concepts or terms like harm reduction are thrown around a lot, but people don't really understand what mm-hmm. harm reduction means. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, harm reduction mm-hmm. is helping people impacted the most with what they need in this very moment. So right now, yes, of mm-hmm. course, you know, poor black folks want racism to end. Of course. Like, I don't like it mm-hmm. when white women touch my hair in public. I don't mm-hmm. like getting complimented yeah. on speak. You speak so well. You know, I don't like getting called
yeah,
fucking
absolutely.
Racial slurs. You know, and I'm not unique in, you know, in that in any aspect. Like, I talked about it. Like, I told a story when I was waitressing. Some guy was like, here's a newspaper article about a company that might be paying reparations because they use slave labor. It might interest you and you probably can't access it where you live. Bitch, we have newspapers at the corner store. Shut the fuck up. Like, you know, like even that shit. But it's like, but you know, it was a customer service job. Like, I can't yell at the guy. So I was like, oh, thank you. Wow, you're so helpful.
Yeah, yeah.
You're amazing, white man. Wow, thank you.
Appreciate it.
You know,
make sure you give big tips.
Exactly. And it's like, of course I don't want those things to happen. However, a living wage or having access to medical care would be so much more mm-hmm. important. And I think that, you know, that needs to be not just saying those things, but giving specific examples. Black people have, black men have disproportionate rates of colon cancer. Black people in general have mm-hmm. disproportionate rates of diabetes, of fucking hypertension. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if we could get mm-hmm. treated for those things because we had Medicare. And of course, yeah, medical racism still exists. But even in an mm-hmm. immediate harm reduction capacity, Medicare for All right now, there would be people who would mm-hmm. be at the doctor next week who wouldn't have been able to access it, you know?
Absolutely.
And it's like, and that's
that
huge.
Like, you know,
the living wage, of course, a fucking racial wage gap is still going to exist. But right now, mm-hmm. $15 an hour would be mm-hmm. huge. $15 an hour.
Oh,
could you
God.
Imagine how many niggas could fucking pay their bail if they were making $15
yeah,
an hour
support?
Or their family were making $15
all
an hour?
All kinds of shit.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know, so it's just like, I don't think people actually
are getting locked up for $300.
And dying for $300.
Shit. Going from $8 to $15 is big.
Mm-hmm.
You're high. You really are.
Yeah,
you know, and it's not like the companies can't afford it. They're seeing record profits, right? And you can connect it directly to what's not spending on labor,
right?
Right?
Yeah.
And people act like these things aren't connected. I don't know what you mean. So, like somebody came in that thread and said, these things aren't connected. I said, you don't understand the connection between systemic racism and you don't recognize the connection between these two things. One is an economic manifestation of racism, racism in America, and the other one is a non-economic one, mm-hmm. right? And this is not hard. This is not hard. Right. And people are adding so much complexity to this thing. There's no complexity needed. There's no complexity in here, right? People mm-hmm. have to make these decisions all the time. And like I said, one tweet, poverty is clarifying as fuck.
It is.
You have a shitty set of options based on your financial situation,
yes.
right? You know, either you deal with this job or your family doesn't eat. People make right. that decision every day.
Yeah, and I'm just going back looking at random tweets in the thread. I have one from somebody who said, but the question is hypothetical, but why is it also a false dilemma? Why not address both concurrently? And I said, it's not a false dilemma. For many black people, the literal choice is go to work and deal with workplace racism or risk being homeless. It's yes. not, like, it's not some shit we've made up, you know?
Yeah,
and then somebody came in and said,
right in the tweet, this is about prioritization, not elimination.
And then someone said, but equating structural racism to someone with no power saying the N-word is Trumpian level misrepresentation, which is like, how do you know nobody at my workplace has systemic power? How do you know that? How do you know their fucking uncle isn't a cop? How do you know their fucking grandfather isn't a judge? Mm-hmm. How the fuck do you know that their mother isn't a banker who's going to deny me a loan because they heard my name from their child that I work with? How the fuck you know that shit?
All kinds of shit.
That's exactly. Yeah, and I, like, I think that's the thing that people miss is, like, when it comes to racism is, like, you know, and I say this all the time, but fuck it, I'll say it again. Racists and just bigots in general, doesn't have to be just race, whether it's, like, fucking misogyny, homophobia, like, transphobia,
whatever ism you choose.
Yeah, whatever the ism is. Like, bigots do not clock out from their bigotry just because they clock into a work shift. The person who hates gay people and works at a bank is not going to give the gay people a loan, right? The person who's a racist and is the hiring manager is going to throw out the resume that has a name that looks a little too hood on it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're not, and those all feed to systemic issues, right? Because systems are created and maintained by people. And people do not clock out of their bigotry just because they went to work today. They bring their bigotry with them and use their bigotry to use whatever influence they have in their workplace to oppress other people and make their lives difficult. And, you know, somewhere in the thread, you know, I don't remember where it is, but, you know, somewhere in the thread, I said something like, you know, William, who's my husband, was just explaining this to the youngest child because the youngest child is, you know, having issues at school. He's like, kids are being mean to me. He's like, well, you're just going to have to work around it. Like, that's just how life goes. You just have to work around shit sometimes, you know? And he was saying, he's like, you know, he's like, I work with a lot of Mexican people, and some of them are really racist, and they call me mayate, which, you know, if you're not familiar with the term mayate, that's basically, like, nigger in Spanish, you know? It's like a dung beetle. And so he's like, you know, they call me mayate, and he's like, I know what it means, but I'm like, okay, yeah, thanks, and then I just keep working, because what am I going to do? Not work, and what am I going to do? Go home and not get paid? what the fuck am I gonna do? You know, and you know, and it's funny too because he's actually sleeping right now because he has to work at, you know, like fucking 4 a.m. And I asked him, I was
that
like,
dude
well,
works, that dude works like a rented mule. Jesus Christ, I don't know how he does.
He really fucking does though. And I asked him, I was like, well, do you want to reschedule recording this so you can be on it too? Like, do you want to add anything? He's like, no, I made one tweet in the whole thread. That was all I had to say. I was like, wait, what did you say? He goes, I'd rather be a nigger with a dollar than a black man with a nickel. That's the whole fucking thing. And he's like, I have no other commentary.
Yeah, I said, that's William. He's like he distilled everything down to this day. Everybody got it, and that's, to me, that's what language is about, right? Distill it down to the most important aspects so everybody can understand it. Right,
yes.
and it's a lost art form apparently, you know, and people are refusing to get it. It would be one thing if you looked at it and said, okay, maybe the wording was a little off in my view, okay, but yeah, I get it once somebody explained it to me. But people are flying in there with the this makes no sense. This is not what organizers do. But I was, what the fuck?
You know what though? Like, okay. So this is, like, my critique of the left, and I know I'm gonna hurt niggas' feelings. I don't actually care, though. A lot of these niggas were like, well, this isn't what organizers do. Like, how the fuck would you know? You couldn't even organize a goddamn book club if your life depended on it. Bitch, you can't organize a grocery list talking about this is what organizers don't do. The fuck you know about organizing? What are y'all organizing? What? What?
Yeah, I,
like, you know, and
for me, it's getting all this out of 180 characters. How do you get there? You know, how do you you're putting stuff in there that's not there, right? It's nothing. Okay, if you didn't get it, you didn't get it, right? There's no nefarious thing going on here. Nobody's trying to hurt anybody's feelings. Right, it's a stark representation of the decisions people have to make when they live in poverty, right? And because they have to make these decisions, we should prioritize what we do in the movement based on their priorities, right? This isn't a hard concept. This is not something that is crazy. This is not something that should, and it also should be seen as a dissertation. Mm-hmm. This isn't a statement about how this is. I'm not trying to tell you, the theory of relativity, some sort of master's level thesis here. It's a fucking tweet, you know. Right. And if you don't get it, then walk away, you know. But to come in hot with all this negativity, why?
You know what, to be honest, why? I think that's because a lot of these people are not actually activists or organizers, no matter how much they claim to be. But I also think that they don't, a lot of them just aren't. But also, here's the thing, it's not just people on the left, but people in general are really good at pretending that they have unpacked everything and now they're woke or whatever. And
the performative wokeness was mind-numbing.
Right. And so now they're in this thing of like, well, I unpacked my anti-blackness. I can't be anti-black. So I am now obligated to comment in a conversation where black people are talking about racism in America. I was like, maybe not.
Even if white folks comment, even if you come in, don't come in telling people what. No, because this was clear. This is crystal clear, right? You eat, your kids eat, you go to work and deal with this shit, or your kids don't eat.
Right.
This is crystal clear.
Right.
Don't come in on the people on the other side, with all the pedantry and all this pedantic parsing bullshit.
Right.
Right. Don't join them. Read the freaking tweet. Like one guy, he came in hot. And he said something that had nothing to do with what was going on. And I said, like, oh, you came here and saw everybody mad, read the tweet, understood it clearly, and didn't know why everybody was mad. So you decided to make something up.
Yep. And honestly, I think, you know, that's the thing, is it's like, this wasn't, this tweet, like I said, you know, you said some nigga shit and a bunch of not niggas had the need to comment on some nigga shit, and it's never going to go well because it wasn't meant for you, because you weren't the target audience, and because, you know, we're in the thing where a lot of white people really think like, oh, but you know, I support Black Lives Matter, and you know, I tweet the hashtag say her name, I do my job, and it's like, that's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
People
are talking about your pro reparations. You should be pro food.
Right. Like, yeah, okay. I'm pro reparations too. I know it's never going to happen in my lifetime, but I'm not trying to starve to death tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So what the fuck is really good?
Exactly.
You know, and it's exactly. Like, that is and I think a big part of it too, and I know there's no money on the left in a lot of ways, but it's like, if one of these people said, you know what, fuck this job, fuck this racism, y'all going to pay their rent? Y'all gonna have to go on me like
exactly.
that?
Exactly.
Y'all got
exactly.
it. Y'all don't got it. Y'all don't got it.
Mm-hmm. You know? And a lot of women too. You know, they deal with workplace sexism every day, and just keep it pushing, right? And they act like they're, you know, people acting like they're all brand new. Like, this, nobody has to make these decisions. This is America. No, that's not, you know. how do you not understand this? You know, and the people and the folks with the you know their resources aren't limited. People, what? Where are you? What planet? Poverty is mentioned in the tweet, and there's no scarcity. How do you get there?
It's weird because I could have sworn there's lead in the water in Flint. Still, it's weird.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
If you want to make the argument,
even after
that, like,
all the attention.
I get the argument, like, oh, under capitalism, they're hoarding resources, like the 1%. Like, I get that. Mm-hmm. However, creates a scarcity.
It's still scarcity.
You're not
whether it's engineered scarcity or real scarcity, it's still scarcity. It's not hard.
It's wild. But, I think a lot of this just comes from because people don't actually want to unpack their racism, or they're like, they think they're as mm-hmm. woke as they need to be and they don't want to, dig further. Because it's like, even, some of the black folks who came in the thread, like, I see mm-hmm. fucking lawyers and shit, fucking degree having niggas and shit. It's like, but were you ever like homeless? Mm-hmm. Like, what you, and I know people are like, oh, we're just trying to be harder than everybody. And it's like, no, but here's the thing is when you have lived that life, you have a different set of eyes when you look at things because
absolutely.
You had to live a
totally
different life
than
a lot of other
folks do. Absolutely true. A totally different point of view. And it shouldn't, and even without that lens, if you don't recognize people have to make shitty decisions because of poverty, like I told one person, and poverty is characterized by limiting your choices because of less resources. That's not hard to understand if you understand what poverty is, right? But it seems like people don't understand what poverty is, don't understand what racism really means and what it really does to people and communities.
Right.
They don't, and I didn't realize, I told Brother Beat, I don't know, I don't even know if he minds that, but I never asked him, but I told Beat before, I said, man, you ask some questions that nobody needed to be asked. Mm-hmm. And you made a lot of people uncomfortable because they didn't have answers. Right, because his thing was okay. Even if you agree, we're going to take care of the economic piece. Okay, so what's left? Right, and nobody could find anything mm-hmm. of consequence other than hurt feelings and bias and basic bigotries. That nothing was not impacted by money.
Right.
Right. Nothing that was important about racism, nothing that really is impactful about racism, is not connected to money.
Right.
Right. And I said it in an article I wrote when I was with Progressive Army. I said it in one article that I don't care what people think about me or say about me if I get equal protection and I get equal protection under the law and I had the opportunities based on what I can or cannot do. Right. Mm-hmm. Just give me that. I'll take care of the rest of my fucking self. Mm-hmm. Right. If you want to stand with me, fine. But if I get equal protection and I can call the cops just like a white lady can call the cops on me, and we go to court, and I know I got a shot, even if I don't have a highfalutin lawyer, right? Mm-hmm. I know I got a shot. That would change everything.
That would change everything. That would be huge.
Right. And that can be fixed by through legislation. That is something concrete. You can look at the numbers and see, okay, this particular judge never gives black folks the benefit of the doubt,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, this is stuff that could be, when you say equal protection, equal means number, right, to my mind, right? If you say equal protection, okay, I need to look at the numbers and see, okay, this, okay, black people are not getting equal treatment at a ridiculous level,
right?
So if we're supposed to have equal protection under the law, look at these numbers and tell me how we're getting equal protection.
Exactly.
Now you need to decide how to fix that, right? If we can get that, and we could get closer to that if people were eating, that would be great. What I mean? But it just seems like there's a lot of paternalism too, right? There's a paternalism that, okay, I'm going to fix everything for you, right? And like my mother often says, open the door, I'll get in my damn self,
right?
Well, help me open the door, right?
But that's also the thing. How the fuck are you going to fix some shit that you don't know about?
Yeah, absolutely. I've said it before. Help people eat. Everybody needs that. Help people get stable and mm-hmm. get out of homelessness, and then they'll tell you, they'll let you know what they need from there,
right?
Take care of the basic shit that everybody needs.
I hear the dogs, but and that's something that I hear a lot, even among the left when
Hold
it comes
a second,
to.
I'll, Yeah. All these damn mutts.
But yeah, that's something that I hear a lot. You know, on the left, as people be like, mm-hmm. oh, we're going to help sex workers, or we're going to help victims of sex trafficking. Let's criminalize the Johns. And like, that doesn't actually help mm-hmm. anybody. Living wages would help. Mm-hmm. Not having arrest records would help. Being able to trust mm-hmm. police would help. You know, like, here's a whole list of things mm-hmm. that would help. And the left be like, let's not do any of those things, you know. It's like, decriminalizing sex work would help. Actually, no. Let's just criminalize the Johns and make it more dangerous, you know. And it's like, oh, let's, you know, end misogyny. Let's have a Me Too movement focused on rich white actresses and ignore, you know, mm-hmm. poor women. You know, and it's like...
And I'm going to confess, until I listen to you guys, criminalizing the Johns would have made sense to me. You know what I mean?
No.
You know? It would have, because I, you know, I don't have the experience, right? That's not my experience, right?
Right.
So I didn't think about it that way, right? And not understanding, you would think that, okay, if you, not even criminalize Johns, but I don't know, if you criminalize Johns just as well, because I guess that's an issue, saying that the Johns always get away and the prostitutes always end up in jail, right? or always end up punished in some way, right? So criminalizing the Johns, okay, everybody's even. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that, you know, on the surface that makes sense,
right?
But until listening to somebody with your experience and knowing the people that you know, I said, oh shit, I didn't realize how freaking dumb I was.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I didn't know, right?
Right.
And I don't have a problem admitting that I didn't know, right? And now that I do know, I can share that with other people,
right.
you know?
Yeah,
and that's, to me, that's what this is all about. What that text could have been enlightening for a lot of people, but mm-hmm. they went to the performative wokeness, right? Instead of saying, oh shit, that makes sense. Oh yeah, wow, it could have been clarifying. Right. Mm. But they went to outrage, the full outrage, and went to, oh my God, I can't believe you wrote this. What is this bullshit? Delete this. What the you guys are better than this. What the fuck? You don't recognize this dilemma that people have to go through every day? You don't recognize this?
No, they really don't know and how bad it is.
No. And it's sad it's so sad they don't recognize it. It's so sad.
To me, the most telling thing about them not being able to recognize it means that you don't have as many black friends as you think you do.
Yeah, yeah. Or you have black friends that they're black friends, but they're not really friends.
Right, yeah.
They don't come to your house
really
and drink beers
friends,
with you. You don't go to their house. You don't hang out together.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, I got a handful of close friends, and everybody else pretty much is an acquaintance, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're cool. You know, not like I wouldn't be there for you if you needed me or whatever, but I got five close friends that are, you know, you would go to war for, right?
Right.
And some folks you would still go to war for, but, you know, that's that group of people, right? But some people think that their Twitter friends or whoever, you know, nothing against Twitter friends, right? I got a lot of Twitter friends too.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying, they think that those people are really ride or die, but they're not.
No, not
all of them are anyway.
No,
right?
Most of them are.
There are some people, like one day, somebody in my state needed help. Somebody in the group needed help moving, right? I didn't know them from a can of paint. But me and my son got in the pickup truck and drove down there and helped them move, right? Because they've been, you know, of course, we went armed.
Uh-oh. I think we lost him. So I guess on that note, we're going to tie it off because we just lost him. All right. So, really? All right. Well, okay. That's unfortunate. Anyways, so that was Michael Graham from Actify Press, and you can find him on Twitter at Actify Press, I think is actually the Twitter handle. Let me double check that. Yes, at Actify Press. And, of course, you can follow me, Phoenix Kalita, at Uppity Negress, 2 P's, 2 T's, 2 S's. This was kind of like a Free Thought Thursday, just to talk about how class and race intersect, because a lot of folks seem really confused about poor black people wanting, you know, material goods or wanting more economic opportunity to help to be able to fight, you know. And if I just had to give a closing thought about it, it was like, you can't make it to the revolution if you're too sick to fight, or if you're too tired to fight, or if you're too hungry to fight, you know? So people need to have access to material things, to medical care, to food, to living wages. That is an important part of being able to dismantle other types of oppression, especially systemic oppression, because we need the resources. So, you know, stop shitting on people who talk about harm reduction as it pertains to giving people material goods. Right now, black people are hungry. Right now, black people don't have medical care. Right now, poor people are suffering. I'm not opposed to economic plans that help them in a harm reduction way so that they can then, after they get a little healthier, after they get a little bit more well-fed, so on and so forth, they can fucking stand up and fight in the revolution, stand shoulder to shoulder. We fucking need that. So, sorry MG's phone cut out like that, but this nigga live up in the mountains somewhere. I don't fucking know. So, anyways, thank you for hanging out with us in the Wine Cellar. As always, you can hit up the patreon.com/winecellarmediafund or paypal.me/phoenixandwilliam. And if you like what we do, you can always feel free to help keep the Wine Cellar up and help hold the Wine Cellar down. Otherwise, y'all have a good fucking night. Stay as safe as you can where you are. Be well and enjoy the rest of these fucking holidays. All right. Take care, y'all.